And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's April 21st, 111th day of this new year. 254 days remain until this year's over with. On this day in history, in 753 B.C., Romulus found Rome. Nobody said where Remus was. 43 B.C., Battle of Mutina. Mark Antony's again defeated in battle by Aulus Hirtius, who was killed. Antony fails to capture Mutina, and Decimus Brutus is murdered shortly after that. In 900 A.D., a Laguna copper plate inscription. The earliest known written document found in what's now the Philippines. Commander-in-Chief of the Kingdom of Tondo is represented by the Honorable Jayadua, Lord Minister of Palia. Pardons from all debt, the Honorable Nemoran and his relations. The interesting thing about the Laguna copper plate, it's an official document. More precisely, an acquittance inscribed in the Shaka year 822. It's an early known calendar dated document used in the Philippine Islands. A laborer found it in 1989 near the mouth of the Lumbang River in Wawa, in Lumban, Laguna, in the Philippines. The description was written in Old Malay using the Kawi script with Sanskrit and Old Javanese influences. After it was discovered, the text was first translated in 1992 by Nantun Pasma. It was considered quite the coup to find something like that. 1092, the Diocese of Pisa is elevated to the rank of Metropolitan Archdiocese by Pope Urban II. 1506, Three-day Lisbon massacre comes to an end with the slaughter of over 1,900 suspected Jews by Portuguese Catholics. See, that's what I find so baffling, that people would actually kill other people over their religion. At the end of the day, what does it matter? 1506, 1509, Henry VIII ascends the throne of England on the death of his father, Henry VII. 1526, the last ruler of the Lodi dynasty, Ibrahim Lodi, is defeated and killed by Babur in the First Battle of Panipat. 1615, the Wignacourt Aqueduct is inaugurated in Malta. 1782, the city of Ratanakosin, now known internationally as Bangkok, is founded on the eastern bank of the Chao Phraya River by King Buddha Yodfa Chulalongkorn. What a name. 1789, John Adams is sworn in as the first U.S. Vice President. He was sworn in 9 days before Washington was. Also in 1789, George Washington's reception at Trenton is hosted by the ladies of Trenton as he heads to New York for his first inauguration. 1792, Tiradentes, a revolutionary leading a movement for Brazil's independence, is hung, drawn, and quartered. Somebody really did not like him. In 1802, 12,000 Wahhabis sack Karbala, kills over 3,000 of its inhabitants. And this happened under the rule of Abdulaziz bin Muhammad, the second ruler of the first Saudi state. Approximately 12,000 Wahhabis from Najd attacked the city of Karbala. This attack coincided with the anniversary of the Ghadir Qum event, or the now the Wahhabis killed somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 inhabitants and plundered the tomb of Hussein ibn Ali, grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, and son of Ali ibn Abi Talib, and destroyed its dome, seized a large quantity of spoils, including gold, Persian carpets, money, pearls, and guns that accumulated in the tomb. Most of them donated by followers. The attack lasted for 8 hours, after which the Wahhabis left the city with more than 4,000 camels carrying their plunder. All in the name of religion, of course. In 1806, the action of April 21st, 1806, French frigate escapes British forces off the coast of South Africa. 1809, two Austrian army corps are driven from Landshut by a 1st French Empire army led by Napoleon, as two French corps to the north hold off the main Austrian army on the first day of the Battle of Eckmühl. 1821, Benderli Ali Pasha arrives in Constantinople as the new Grand Vizier of the Ottoman Empire. He remains in power for only 9 days before being sent into exile. Should have gotten a contract. 1836, Texas Revolution, Battle of San Jacinto. Primitive Texas forces under Sam Houston defeat troops under Mexican General Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna. This was after the Alamo. 1856, Australian labor movement. Stonemasons and building workers on building sites around Melbourne marched from the University of Melbourne to Parliament House to achieve an 8-hour workday. 1894, Norway formally adopts the Krag Jorgensen bolt-action rifle as the main arm of its armed forces. And this particular weapon would remain in service for over 50 years. 1898, Spanish-American War. U.S. Navy begins a blockade of Cuban ports. When Congress issued a declaration of war on April 25th, it declared that a state of war had existed from this particular date in history. 1914, the Piranga incident. Germans arms shipment to Mexico is intercepted by the U.S. Navy near Veracruz. 1918, World War I. German fighter ace Manfred von Richthofen, better known as the Red Baron, is shot down and killed over Volxersulm in France, which was a major blow to German morale. 1926, Al-Baqi Cemetery, former site of the mausoleum of four Shia imams, is leveled to the ground by Wahhabis. 1934, the surgeon's photograph, the most famous photograph allegedly showing the Loch Ness Monster, is published in the Daily Mail. And now in 1999, it was allegedly shown to be a hoax. 1945, World War II, Soviet forces south of Berlin at Zossen attacked the German High Command headquarters. 1948, United Nations Security Council Resolution 47 relating to the Kashmir conflict is adopted. 1952, Secretary's Day, now Administrative Professionals Day, is first celebrated. 1958, United Airlines Flight 736 collides with a U.S. Air Force fighter jet near Arden in Nevada in what's now Enterprise, Nevada. 1960, Brasilia, Brazil's capital, is officially inaugurated. At 9:30, the three powers of the Republic are simultaneously transferred from the old capital, which was in Rio de Janeiro. 1962, Seattle World's Fair. It was the Century 21 Exposition. Opens up. It's the first World's Fair in the U.S. since World War II. 1963, the first election of the Universal House of Justice is held, making its establishment as a supreme governing institution of the Bahia faith. 1964, a Transit 5BN satellite fails to reach orbit after launch. As it reenters the atmosphere, 2.1 pounds of radioactive plutonium in the SNAP RTG power source is widely dispersed. 1965, the 1964-65 New York World's Fair opens for its second and final season. 1966, Rastafari movement, Haile Selassie of Ethiopia visits Jamaica, an event now celebrated as Grenadian Day. 1967, a few days before the general election in Greece, Colonel George Papadopoulos leads a coup d'etat, establishing a military regime that lasted 7 years. 1972, astronauts John Young and Charles Duke fly Apollo 16's lunar module to the moon surface. That's the fifth NASA Apollo program crewed lunar landing. 1975, Vietnam War. President of South Vietnam, Nguyen Van Thieu, flees Saigon as Dan Loc, the last South Vietnamese outpost blocking a direct North Vietnamese assault on Saigon, falls. Basically, the South Vietnamese army had been so undermined that without us supporting them, they didn't have a prayer. 1977, Annie opens on Broadway. 1982, baseball. Riley Fingers of the Milwaukee Brewers becomes the first pitcher to record 300 saves. 1985, the compound of the militant group, the Covenant, the Sword, and the Arm of the Lord surrenders to federal authorities in Arkansas after a two-day government siege. 1987, the Tamil Tigers are blamed for a car bomb that detonates in the Sri Lankan capital city of Colombo. 106 people are killed, and quite a number are injured. 1989, the Tiananmen Square protest of 89. In Beijing, about 100,000 students gather in Tiananmen Square to commemorate Chinese reform leader Hu Yaobang. 1993, the Supreme Court in La Paz, Bolivia sentences former dictator Luis Garcia Meza to 30 years in jail without parole for murder, theft, fraud, and violating the Constitution. 21st century. 2004, five suicide car bombers target police stations in and around Basra. Kills 74 and wounds 160. 2010, the controversial Kharkiv Pact, Russian-Ukrainian naval base for gas treaty, is signed in Kharkiv, Ukraine by Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych and Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. Unilaterally terminated by Russia on March 31, 2014. 2012, two trains were involved in a head-on collision near Sloterdijk in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. 116 people are injured. 2014, the American city of Flint, Michigan switches its water source to the Flint River, which begins the ongoing Flint River crisis, which has caused lead poisoning in up to 12,000 people. 15 deaths from Legionnaires' disease, ultimately leading to criminal indictments against 15 people, five of whom were charged with involuntary manslaughter. And finally, in 2019, eight bombs exploded at churches, hotels, and other locations in Sri Lanka on Easter Sunday. More than 250 people are killed. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Adocalus, Anastasius in Alta, Anselm of Canterbury, Biuno, Conrad of Parzam, Holy Infant of Good Health, Shimon Bar Sabe, Wobodo. In India, it's Civil Service Day, it's Grenation Day in Rastafari, Heroic Defense of Vera Cruz Day in Mexico, Kang Pansok's birthday in North Korea, Kartini Day in Indonesia, Local Self-Government Day in Russia, National Tea Day in the United Kingdom, National Tree Planting Day in Kenya, San Jacinto Day in Texas, and the Falkland Islands, it's the Queen's official birthday, Tiradentes Day in Brazil, and in Vietnam, it's Vietnam Book Day. Okay, let's see what else we might have. Let's see, in 1863, founder of the Bahia faith, enters the Garden of Ribden near Baghdad, makes his declaration as a messenger of God during the 12 days he spends there. It's interesting. Everybody thinks they're a messenger of God. Okay, let's see what else we might have. Okay, we've 953, Otto I, also known as Otto the Great, gives a Utrecht fishing rights. 1453, the Turkish fleet sinks ship's golden receiver in Constantinople. 1521, the Battle of Villalar. Emperor Charles I beats the Communards. 1536, Thomas Cromwell, lawyer and statesman, begins to plot Anne Boleyn's downfall while feigning illness. 1572, France and England sign the anti-Spanish military covenant. 1649, the Maryland Toleration Act passed in the American colony allowed freedom of worship for Christians, but sentenced to death anybody who rejected the divinity of Jesus. Religion. 1654, England and Sweden sign a trade agreement. 1689, William III and Mary Stuart are proclaimed King and Queen of England. 1739, Spain and Naples and Austria sign a peace accord. 1785, Catherine II, also known as Catherine the Great of Russia, confers on the nobility the charter to the nobility, increasing further the power of the landed oligarchs. 1794, New York City formally declares the coast of Ellis Island publicly owned so they can build a fort to protect New York City from the British. 1796, Napoleon and the French defeat the Piedmontese at the Battle of Mondovi. 1820, Danish scientist Hans Christian Ørsted, the first to identify electromagnetism. He did that while watching a compass needle. 1855, the first train crosses the Mississippi River's first bridge from Rock Island, Illinois to Davenport, Iowa. 1857, Alexander Douglas patents the bustle. 1862, Congress establishes a U.S. Mint in Denver, Colorado. 1865, on this date, Abraham Lincoln's funeral train leaves Washington. 1878, First Lady Lucy Hayes begins egg rolling contests on the White House lawn. 1878, New York installs the first firehouse pole. 1878, the ship Azor leaves Charleston with 206 blacks bound for Liberia. 1884, Potter's Field reopened as Madison Park. Potter's Field was where they buried indigents. 1913, the German passenger ship Imperator runs aground. 1914, U.S. Marines occupy Veracruz, a major Mexican port. They'll stay there for 6 months or until the liquor runs out. 1916, Ulster Protestant and Irish nationalist Sir Roger Casement lands in Tralee Bay, Ireland, from a German submarine. He's discovered at McKenna's Fort and arrested by the Royal Irish Constabulary. 1916, the Aude, carrying a cargo of 20,000 rifles to assist Irish Republicans in staging what would become the 1916 uprising, is captured by the British Navy and forced to sail toward Cork Harbor. 1930, a fire at Ohio State Penitentiary kills 322. 1935, King Boris of Bulgaria forbids all political parties. 1940, the first $64 question, take it or leave it, appears on CBS radio. That went on to become a major scandal when it was turned out that the questions had been given to the contestant. And on this date, 1945, the Soviet Army arrives at the outskirts of Berlin. All right. Well, we finished our history thing. We were talking about witches and witchcraft. And as I said yesterday, an estimated 80,000 people, 85% of them women, most of them poor, were investigated for witchcraft between 1500 and 1800. If you didn't like somebody, a very easy charge to bring against them was witchcraft. In 1682, following the scandalous affair of the poisons in the royal court, King Louis XIV halts witchcraft trials in France. 1675 to 1690, in the Salzburg Austria witch trials, 139 people are accused and executed. Just as it is today, accusation equals guilt. Most of the accused are members of a gang of homeless beggars led by Paul Jacob Kohler, also known as the Jackal, whose mother, under torture, said he had a pact with Satan. And like most of the trials, nearly all these accused are male, and almost 100 of them are children or teenagers. The youngest was just 10. 1691, Balthasar Becker publishes The Enchanted World, the most famous book about spectral magic. Cotton Mather was quite influenced by it. Now, that was a lunatic that needed to be sent off in the woods to amuse himself rather than having all the power of the church behind him. 1712, at the last official witch trial in England, Jane Wyndham is accused of causing a girl to have fits. She pleads guilty, but a judge found her innocent. 1736, in Britain, the Witchcraft Act is repealed, making it a crime to accuse someone of witchcraft. 1768, under the rule of the Empress, Maria Theresa of Hungary ends witchcraft trials. 1782, Anna Galdi, a maid accused of sickening her employer's daughters, is tried and beheaded in Switzerland. She did it through witchcraft. She's the last known person executed for witchcraft in Europe. The last known person. Now let's talk about, you know, one of the things that led a woman to be accused of witchcraft was being independent, speaking her mind. We're going to talk about some famous figures in the witch world. The first one is Dame Alice Keiteler, also known as the Merry Widow. Now, the witchcraft trials in the 16th and 17th century dominate history, but Alice Keiteler of Kilkenny, Ireland, was accused of witchcraft in 1324, making her the first known accused European witch. Born to wealthy Norman merchants in 1263, she was just a teen when she married local banker William Outlaw. The groom died of a sudden illness a few years later, leaving Kai Taylor with a young son by the name of William and an even healthier bank account. Now, she married a second well-off moneylender, Adam DeBlund of Cullen, shortly after her first husband died. The pair were briefly accused of killing her first husband, but there was insufficient evidence. Not that evidence has ever really been important in regard to witchcraft. Allegation is what's most important. Well, even though they were acquitted, her marital bliss was short-lived, and DeBlund died of a similar mystery sickness before his death. DeBlund altered his will, leaving everything to his wife Alice and her son William instead of his own children. Shortly after his death, Kai Taylor married again Richard Duvalier, a wealthy Tipperary landowner, who, after a short period of wedded bliss, mysteriously died. When he died, Gatella sued his son for her part inheritance. Now one of the wealthiest women in Kilkenny, Alice also owned and ran her family's tavern, Cotteller's Inn, where she employed multiple beautiful women. The fine food, the ale, and of course the lovely ladies made it the most popular stop for locals and travelers alike. But there were those in town who were less than pleased with Cotteller. The part which was beginning to upset her neighbors was she was managing this all by herself without the aid of a strong man. Anne Farrell wrote a book about this. It's included in Kilkenny Folktales. And no matter how wealthy a woman became, she was always a target for the men who thought she was getting above herself. Women need to know their place, according to the powers that be. Novelist Niamh Boyce, who wrote a novel based on Kai Taylor, concurs that even more than her dead husband's, it was her business success that made her an outsider. Kai Taylor was, in fact, a very powerful businesswoman, very, very wealthy property owner and moneylender. Despite getting some side-eyed in town, the cauldron didn't bubble over until Kai Taylor married Sir John DePoor, who, a few years after they got married, fell ill and apparently his fingernail and hair fell out, which is consistent with arsenic poisoning. At first, DePoor defended his wife, but he later changed his tune, saying he suspected he was being poisoned and had found a locked chest containing evidence of her sorcery. Now, this new evidence didn't go over well with his children, who found themselves disinherited after his death. Together with the children of Alice's other dead husbands, they brought complaints of maleficium against their stepmother, claiming she'd bewitched their fathers and killed them to benefit herself and her son. They took their grievances to Richard Ledrede, the Bishop of Ossory, who had been eagerly awaiting any chance to defend his territory from heresy. Investigation allegedly unveiled that Cotella was the leader of a crew of demon worshippers, mostly the women it worked for. In addition to being husband murderers, Alice and her associates were accused of animal sacrifices and heresy. Cotella was said to have gotten her powers from a lesser demon known as Robin Artesian, who appeared in various forms. Notably, Alice, who was also alleged to have had sexual relations with Robin, first was accused of doing the nasty with a nasty. In fact, William Butler Yeats wrote about this in his work called 1919. Well, after suitable torture, Cotteller's maid, Petronella de Meath, confessed to many of the crimes and pointed the finger at her employer. Petronella said she had several times, at Alice's instigation and once in her presence, consulted demons and received answers. Cotteller still had friends in high places, though, including her former brother-in-law, Chancellor of Ireland, Roger Outlaw, who got a stay in the court proceedings. And that allowed Cotteller to escape with Petronella's daughter. Neither was ever heard from again. Well, Petronella herself, when so lucky, became the first person burned at the stake for witchcraft. Cotteller's son, William, recanted his mother's ways and had to attend 3 masses a day for a year. So some senile old fart mumbling over you, three times a day would save your soul from Satan. Let's talk about Mother Shipton. She's fairly well known. Now, Mother Shipton was well known to history as a prophetess. Mother Shipton's cave is quite a drawing card, and Mother Shipton's statue in Carrsboro is always a center of attention. She foretold iron ships and aircraft and the execution of Mary, Queen of Scots. She's often compared to Nostradamus. Her name is Ursula Suntiel, also known as Mother Shipton. And she's England's most famed prophet. Written in rhyming couplets similar to Nostradamus, her visions are said to have foretold events including the Spanish Armada of 1588, the Great Plague of London that killed nearly 100,000 people in 1665, as well as the city's Great Fire in 1666. Now, as always, separating fact from fiction isn't an easy task. The first collection of her prophecies didn't appear until 80 years after her death, and Charles Henley, who authored the most popular version in 1862, later admitted to making a lot of it up, according to an investigation by the British Museum. Now, legend has it Suntiel was born to an unwed mother in a cave near the River Need in Yorkshire in 1488. With no family to help her out, the mother gave her at about the age of two to a local woman, and tales of magical happenings, to include furniture moving on its own, dishes flying around the room, were found throughout her early years. Reportedly hideously ugly, with a hunchback and a crooked nose, Suntiel eventually returned to the area around the cave and taught herself to make natural remedies from flowers and herbs. 24, she married a carpenter by the name of Toby Shipton, and they set up a house near Carrsboro. She continued her herbal practices and began telling fortunes. Eventually, her acclaim as a soothsayer drew people from far and wide, and she became known as Mother Shipton. Unlike so many other witches of the period, she wasn't prosecuted for witchcraft, but died of natural causes in 1561, an event she is universally said to have predicted. Her cave and the adjacent petrifying well remain popular tourist attractions, as I said. And we have Isabel Gowdy. Now, Isabel Gowdy may be the biggest oversharer in the history of witchcraft. Thousands of women and men were tortured into giving confessions during Scotland's witch trials, but over 6 weeks beginning on April 13, 1662, in the village of Aldern, Gowdy, an illiterate farm wife, offered four intensely detailed confessions, unprompted by torture. Now, modern scholars suggest she was likely mistreated and sleep-deprived, but be that as it may, she gave confessions, and that's all the powers that be cared about. In her confessions that were published in Robert Pitcairn's 1833 Ancient Criminal Trials in Scotland, she claimed to be a member of a coven in the service of Satan, and she didn't hold back on the details of her carnal relationship with the devil. She admits to multiple acts of maleficium, malicious magic, as it were, including destroying her neighbor's crops, using a child's body stolen from the grave, and burning effigies to cause death and suffering to local leaders and her offspring. She also claims to have turned herself into various animals and to have participated in witches' sabbats and named 12 other women. Her confession is what historian Margaret Murray uses the basis for her theory that covens have 13 members. Another distinguishing feature in Gowdy's testimony is the extensive talk of her dealings with fairies, dining with the fairy king and queen, and was broadly clothed in white linen. Scholars have suggested Gowdy may have been suffering from psychosis, though nobody knows what happened to her after the trial, and actually there's no record of her execution. Gowdy continues to inspire. She's been a character in many novels and TV shows, and Scottish composer James Macmillan even wrote a symphony about her called The Confessions of Isabel Gowdy. Then we have the one known as the King's Nemesis. Her name, Agnes Sampson. Trained in the black arts, according to the story by her father, Agnes Sampson was a prominent cunning woman, a healer who made occasional clairvoyant predictions in the small village of Netherkeith in East Lothian, Scotland. And that's according to witchcraft in early modern Scotland. Her clients included commoners as well as low-level gentry and earned her the nickname the Wise Wife of Keith. Alas, her renown made Sampson an easy target when witch hysteria took hold of Scotland. 1590, Sampson was already in custody for suspected witchcraft when fellow accused witch, Giles Duncan, who inspired the Outlander character, named Sampson and several others in her confession, and that launched the North Berwick trial. Now, this was the first Scottish witch trial under laws newly established by King James VI, a misogynist so obsessed with sorceress that he wrote his own guide to hunting them down. Around 70 people were accused and most confessed under torture. But reports in the news from Scotland tell how Sampson maintained her innocence. Now, King James, who had recently married Anne of Denmark and felt that storms impeding her royal return had been brought on by witnesses, took a personal interest in Sampson's case and had her brought to the Palace of Holyrood, a house in Edinburgh, so he could question her himself. Well, in spite of his, according to him, brilliant questions, she refused to confess, and King James didn't like that. Had her shorn, stripped, and tortured, looking on with great delight. Sampson held out for days before finally admitting to multiple crimes, including causing a storm that drowned noblewoman Jane Kennedy, conspiring with the devil and excavating bodies for spells. Well, she was burned at the stake January 28, 1591. In spite of her death, she may well have gotten a last life. Her ghost reportedly haunts Holyrood Palace. Well, there are many stories of alleging all kinds of evil activity by some of these witches. But the mere fact that there are stories doesn't mean they are true. Let's talk about La Voisin. Behind the gilded gates of Versailles, France, some poisonous practices were afoot. And smack in the middle was famed sorcerer Catherine Monvoisin, also known as La Voisin. Born in 1640, she had visions all her life, but only got into the fortune-telling game after her husband Antoine's jewelry business went belly up. She also worked as a midwife, that's a common occupation of women accused of witchcraft, and performed illegal abortions, reportedly burning and burying thousands of fetal remains in her garden. According to Anne Somerset's The Affair of the Poisons, Murder, Infanticide, and Satanism in the Court of Louis XIV. Voisin began to see a pattern to her clients' desires. Almost everybody who came to a reading wanted a lover or an inheritance. So the enterprising clairvoyant, who often performed in a custom-made red velvet robe embroidered with golden eagles, cashed in on her clients' desires. Started selling amulets, love potions, poisons, and rituals. She even began brokering black masses where clients could pray to Satan for a wish to be granted. Well, by the 1660s, La Voisin had achieved considerable fame and fortune with a client roster including a good chunk of French aristocracy. Among those were Duchess of Bouillon, Marie Anne Mancini, and the Duke of Luxembourg, Francois Henri de Montmorency. She lived in Villeneuve-sous-Gravois and had lavish parties with the Parisian aristocracy in her garden. In 1667, noblewoman Madame de Montespan allegedly hired La Voisin to instigate a black mass where she prayed to win the love of King Louis XIV. According to a statement, I saw my mother bring in an infant, obviously premature, and place it in a basin over which the priest Guibert slit its throat, draining the blood under the chalice, speaking the names of Madame de Montespan and the king. Malvoisin's daughter, Marguerite, testified to that. According to Eleanor Herman in Sex with Kings, 500 Years of Adultery, Power, Rivalry, and Revenge. And apparently it did work. De Montespan became Louis's official royal mistress and bore him 7 children. Now, it says a lot about a king when he has someone in the official position of royal mistress. Whenever a problem arose near a relationship, De Montespan would seek help from La Voisin, who set up multiple masses and furnished her with love potions to keep the king, Sun King's favor. When Louis took romantic interest in Angelique de Fontanges in 1679, an enraged Montespan allegedly asked La Voisin to kill both the king and the lover. After initially protesting, La Voisin put an unsuccessful plan in motion to murder the king with a poison petition. Angelique did die, but an autopsy found natural causes. However, a household servant named Francois Filastre admitted under torture she'd been poisoned. And in fact, she had actually given the poison to Angelique on behalf of de Montespan. Although, right before her execution, she recanted her confession. La Voisin, her daughter, and other acquaintances were arrested on March 12th. Unlike many others accused of witchcraft, La Voisin was never tortured, even though an order had been issued to let it be. Scholars speculate that with La Voisin's extensive ties to court, a full confession might have proved devastating to the upper class. Though she never confessed to doing any dark work for de Montespan, La Voisin eventually did admit Paris is full of this kind of thing and there's an infinite number of people engaged in its evil trade. Well, she was put on trial and convicted and burned at the stake February 19, 1680. After her death, it was her daughter who told her de Montespan's murderous plans. Well, embarrassed by the entire situation, Louis XIV terminated the investigation. De Montespan continued to live at the court for the next 10 years, proving once again, it's who you know. Well, probably one of the most famous witches, if you want to apply that term to her, was Marie Laveau, also known as the Voodoo Queen. Her tomb is the second most visited grave in the U.S. after Elvis's at Graceland. But in 2015, officials limited visits to guided tours. Now, I was there around that time. And the tour that I took was fascinating. And on the ground around her tomb was money, credit cards, everything you could imagine. And I asked the tour guide, I said, where I live, that would have been gone 15 minutes after it's put down. He said, nobody here dares steal from Marie Laveau. Well, New Orleans is a city known for its otherworldly occurrences and occupants. But probably the most famous is Marie Laveau, the Voodoo Queen. Over 150 years after her death, tourists still flock to her tomb in St. Louis Cemetery No. 1 and followed the ritual of drawing 3 crosses while asking Laveau for a favor. Now, she was a free woman of color, born in the French Quarter in 1801, raised primarily by her grandmother, a formerly enslaved person. She was taught both the traditions of Catholicism as well as Voodooism. At just 18, she married Haitian immigrant Jacques Paris. But less than a year later, her groom mysteriously disappeared. Absolutely vanished. No sign of him was ever found. She began calling herself the Widow Paris. Shortly after, she began a relationship with a French nobleman, Christophe Dominique Dumini de Clapillon, and because he was a white man, they weren't allowed to marry, even though she was very light-skinned herself. But they lived together till he died in 1855, even had 7 children, one of whom became a voodoo practitioner, known as Marie Laveau II. A healer and a herbalist, Laveau also worked as a hairdresser, and her clients included some of the city's most prominent women as well as their servants. And everybody knows that people tend to get chatty when they're sitting in the hairdresser's chair. And historians have speculated Laveau's celebrated clairvoyance abilities may actually have been based on the fact she pieced together secrets from her vast network of clients. Either way, she always seemed to have just the thing to fix any situation. Now, voodoo had negative connotations at that point in time, but Laveau, who remained a devout Catholic, combined elements from both faiths to reach a wider audience. She famously led public voodoo rituals full of dancing and singing in Congo Square, and despite strict segregation laws. People of all races participated. Now, some folks were afraid of Laveau and spoke of terrible things happening to those who crossed her. Local newspaper The Crescent called her the notorious hag who reigns over the ignorant and superstitious as the queen of the voodoos. But she was also widely revered for her powers, and people traveled great distances for her counsel. She reportedly dispensed charms and potions to heal the sick and even save condemned men from the gallows. When she died in 1881 of natural causes, the New York Times ran a lengthy obituary claiming besides knowing the secret healing qualities of the various herbs, she was endowed with more than the usual share of common sense, and her advice was of oft-times really valuable and her penetrations remarkable. Adding to the qualities the gift of great beauty, no wonder she possessed a large influence in her youth and attracted the attention of Louisiana's greatest and most distinguished visitors. Lawyers, legislators, planters, merchants all came to pay their respects. Now, she continues to enchant and has served as inspiration for dozens of books, films, and songs, including a Marvel Comics hero as Angela Bassett's character in American Horror Story. Yeah. Marie Laveau had quite a following. Let's talk about Lori Cabot, also known as Salem's Keeper. Now, modern witches owe a debt of gratitude to Lori Cabot, who spent decades dispelling misconceptions about the craft. Born Mercedes Elizabeth Kiersey in 1933, Cabot's always had an interest in witchcraft and claimed she was often in trouble as a child for sharing info she picked up through ESP. When she was a teenager, her family moved from California to Boston, where she began exploring witchcraft at the public library. At 16, she participated at a ritual where she vowed, "I return to earth my wisdom and I call myself witch." Following her second divorce in the 1960s, she decided to take that vow to the next level and live totally as a witch. Began wearing dark robes and black eye makeup. "Putting on the black gives me peace of mind and a magical surge," she said. "Black absorbs light, giving me strength and more psychic power so that I may do magic and healing." She adopted the name Cabot, claiming she's from a long line of witches from the Boston Brahmin Cabot family. Committed to educating others, she wrote several books on witchcraft and opened New Age shops, which garnered national attention when one was featured on Bewitched. Upset by negative portrayals of witches in pop culture, she founded the Cabot Tradition of the Science of Witchcraft and the Witches League for Public Awareness. "Our religion has no evil deities, our philosophy requires no fear tactics to function on the education and enlightenment, she said during an interview. She was named the official witch of Salem in 1977 by Massachusetts Governor Michael I Want to Be President Dukakis. How about Sandra Ramos? As a teenager in the 1960s, Sandra Ramos rebelled against her conservative upbringing by running away from home and dating older men. She said, "I thought these things gave me power." When she discovered Z, Budapest brand of feminist, Dianic, Wiccan activists like Florence Kennedy, she realized there were better ways to rebel. She said, "I consider myself a witch, and a witch is a woman who's in touch with her power. She's somebody who knows we have a strength the patriarchy can't take away." Taking the goddess spirit to heart, the New Jersey resident oversaw the creation of multiple shelters for women and children who are victims of domestic violence. Currently, her Strengthen Our Sisters organization offers multiple services to those in need, including child care, education, and legal aid. And even though she's 78, she says she's got so much more to do. As for the young residents of Ringwood, New Jersey, Ramos is known for being the joyful witch who hugs trees, sings, drums, and has a penchant for purple. Her house in the woods, naturally, is purple. So's her car, clothing, even her hair. She said children love it. They relate to magic. When asked by one interviewer when she was going to grow up, she said, "I hope never." Well, you know, witches today have a different connotation than in history. Sorceresses have become feminist symbols. And from riding on broomsticks, there is quite a number of other ways to travel. You know, the world of Wicca is a discussion of how the pagan faith became one of the fastest growing religions in this country. Now, the goddess, which is what all this is built around, has been looking for her children, according to New York City-based attorney and best-selling author Phyllis Garrott. According to her, she comes in dreams and speaks to their hearts. Other men and women go seeking her. They know something is missing. They long for meaning deeper than our celebrity-dominated culture. There's a hunger for contact with something that gives a true sense of purpose. And she says people of all ages and races are finding the answers in the study and practice of Wicca. And she ought to know, even though she's an attorney, she's a Wiccan priestess. First thing to understand about contemporary Wicca is that it has nothing to do with bubbling cauldrons, satanic worship, and summoning demons. Consider it more a revival of pre-Christian traditions that embrace and honor the goddess and her consort, a god, as well as the changes of the season and the moon phases. The ritual practices of Wicca may include things like casting spells for healing and protection, and rituals often invoke the five classic elements: air, fire, water, earth, and aether, or spirit. These elements are presented in the five points of the pentagram, which is the most frequently used symbol of Wicca. Ironically, the pentagram is one of the things that led to the religion's bad rap. It's actually the reverse pentagram, where two points are faced downward, that has been associated with summoning evil. But as theology expert Mary Matunas explains, in the eyes of some, Wicca appears to dance close to the satanic side of the magic and the pentagram because it's got such a bad association already. The reality is there's nothing to fear. Most Wiccan holidays are exuberant celebrations embracing the totality of life. Aging, death, and sickness are included, but the nature of the practice is joyful. And many of those, such as New Year's and May Day, are things already celebrated in other religions that were simply rebranded. Wicca provides tools for people who have already really profound experiences. You're given techniques so you can go to a spiritual journey and discover the world is, in fact, divine and sacred. Now, pagan traditions go back thousands of years, but according to Gerald Gardner, who's known as the father of Wicca, in fact, he's generally credited with putting modern Wicca on the map in the middle of the last century. Inspired by practices and beliefs of a group of witches in southern England, he was initiated into their New Forest Coven in 1939. He created a master list of beliefs, principles, spells, and rituals, which he called the Book of Shadows, and in the late 1940s, he began utilizing it as a guide for those he inducted into his own Bricket Wood Coven. Many covens and individual practitioners still create their own Book of Shadows today. After England repealed laws against witchcraft in 1951, Gardner created the modern Gardnerian Wicca movement. In 1954, he released Witchcraft Today, which was the first mainstream appearance of Wicca. The book was met with some sensationalized headlines and pearl clutching, but ultimately the nature-based rituals he detailed helped usher in a resurgence of the worship of the mother goddess and her male counterpart, the horned god. Now, Gardner died in 1964, but throughout the 60s and 70s, Gardnerian Wicca was spread through from the UK across other English-speaking countries and divided into multiple traditions, including Georgian Wicca, the female-centric Dianic Wicca, and eclectic Wicca, which encompasses traditions from different sects. And while there are variations among sects, most follow some version of the Wicca reed created by Gardner's protege, priestess Doreen Valente, in the early 1960s. Gillespie summed up as, "Do what thou will, so long as it harms nobody." Now, British businessman Raymond Buckland is believed to have brought Wicca to the East Coast of America in 1962. 4 years later, he opened the Museum of Witchcraft on Long Island, New York, and by 1973, he had founded a new branch called Six Wicca, largely inspired by Anglo-Saxon paganism. But it was another British expat, eccentric antiques dealer, Sybil Leake, who made Wicca a household name in the U.S. She said, "I'm a white witch, and I come from a line of white witches who exist only to do good." She eventually married Hans Holzer at one point. Labeled Britain's most famous witch by the BBC, she introduced her version, called Celtic Witchcraft, to the West Coast when she left her English coven for sunny Los Angeles. Leake made a name for herself in Hollywood as the author of a dozen books, including Dire of a Witch and The Complete Art of Witchcraft. And in 1964, she memorably appeared on an episode of the daytime talk show To Tell the Truth, where she delighted and spooked the celebrity panel with her spellbinding story. Talking about Wicca, she said, "We're a larger organization than the mafia, only we don't hold board meetings." She died in 1982, but no doubt be proud. The U.S. government officially recognized Wicca as a religion in 1985. And since that point in time, membership has boomed. A recent study conducted by the Pew Research Center in conjunction with Trinity College found there are about 1.5 million practicing witches in the U.S. alone. That's more members than the Presbyterian Church. So what's causing this awakening of witches? It's a spiritual practice that really suits the modern temperament, according to Karat. Noting people today tend to be skeptical and more educated than in the past. Wicca is appealing because nobody's asking you to give up your rationality. You're not required to believe in a god you haven't seen or dogma. It's not a mechanical approach to the supernatural. It's a divine approach to the natural. The discovery you have the means of affecting change in yourself as well as the world around you is empowering and uplifting. And this can be especially appealing to women or gender nonconforming people who may have felt constrained by their roles in conservative religions. This happens when somebody becomes disillusioned by more traditional faiths. Wicca is more freeing, and the female mother, earth power, is attractive. Indeed, with a focus on praising the divine feminine, it's easy to see Wicca's appeal to a post-Me Too America. Busy Pennsylvania mother Holly M. credits Wicca with drastically improving her mental and emotional health. She said, "My life is calmer. I get answers quicker when I have a decision to make. And some of my techniques are just going outside and listening. Being pagan is very peaceful. It also teaches you how to build healthy boundaries with people. You recognize those who are toxic." And an added benefit of Wicca is it doesn't require weekly treks to church and an altar. It can be fashioned nearly anywhere, making it fine for solo practitioners. A young lady named Joanne B. said, "I was born into Wicca and I've always been spiritual. I knew I had magic since I was a child. I honed my premonitions and gifts quietly." According to Karat, there is something to be gained in isolation. That's because in nature you tend to be silent, fully present and focused on what you hear, smell, and see, as well as what's whispered in your ear and what you hear in your heart. But she notes finding a coven can be even more magical, especially when it's led by old hats who can teach their rituals and practices. Well, no matter how you practice, Karat says it will change you because Wicca allows you to take off the blindfolds it's been tied on by history, by habit, by culture, and see the sacred in the world around you. And that may well be true. We're going to talk more about it in our next show. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for The Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.